pursuant to section 29-3.3VV and section 29-6.4M, section M part 2 of the Unified Development Code, 2.1 acre R1 zoned subject site is located approximately 200 feet north of the intersection of West Broadway and McBain Avenue. Can we have a staff report, our final staff report of the evening, sir?
Yes, you may. One thing I'd like to add, just a tidbit of information to that overview, is that the applicant with this request is opting to self-restrict to 120 nights with the possibility available of 210. So that should be a great notice there, that being accompanied by 6 transient guests. Going into public notice, the early notification postcards were distributed on the 10th of March. Public hearing letters were distributed on 24th. There were 60 of those. And an ad was ran in the Tribune on the 25th of March. Here is an overview of the subject site. Similar to the last one, it is the same image, just highlighted a little to the left is the subject property. Again, this is a zoned R1 and not the applicant's primary residence. This is a 3-bedroom, 1-bathroom home. That being said, with the 6 transient guests requested, there are three parking spaces would be required to ensure parking compliance, which the property supports. That being said, the bedroom square footage supplied to us per the IPMC would allow for 11 guests, though the max allowed by code is 8. That caveated by that, with this request being 6, the final occupancy will not exceed 6. The dwelling has been used as an STR since 2023, and in 2024 it was used for 44 nights. The designated agent is in Columbia, 3.8 miles, roughly 10 minutes from the dwelling. There has been one code violation identified with the property that was for having uncut grass, which has since been resolved. There have also been 5 unregistered short-term rentals within 300 feet of the property. This is the inverse of the last case. The one unregistered short-term rental is for case 135 that was preceded this. The short-term rental condition use permit is subject to both the general and short-term rental specific criteria, and an STR is permitted in R1 zoned subject site subject to obtaining a conditional use permit, short-term rental certificate of compliance, and a business license. The conditional use permit would support several broad comprehensive plan goals, those being mixed uses within neighborhoods, land use and growth management, and economic development. The use intensity may be greater than surrounding single-family homes due to greater guest turnover frequency, though the noise impact is likely minimal. The subject site has a fenced-in rear yard as well as adequate utilities in place. We have not received any correspondence regarding this proposal. Adopted short-term rental regulations contain provisions to address any negative impacts. 36 of the 43 parcels within 185 feet of the subject site are used for rental purposes. The subject site abuts R1, R2, and RMF properties. In an R1 zoned district, it is permitted that 3 unrelated individuals live together and 4 in the R2 and RMF district. The conditional use permit analysis supports approval. Short-term rental regulations provide an oversight and means to address any impacts imposed by the conditional use permit as a short-term rental. And the approval supports broad policies, strategies, and actions of the comprehensive plan. Our recommendation is to approve the requested short-term rental conditional use permit subject to the following: a condition that a maximum usage shall not exceed 120 nights annually, and a maximum of 6 transient guests regardless of allowance permitted by IPMC. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for staff? I have something to say about this case that they may want to share with their fellow commissioners. C9. Open up for public hearing. Anybody wish to speak on this case? Come forward. State your name, address, then the mic.
I'm Tia Brown. I own 5 McBain Avenue. I live at 4707 McMichael Drive in Columbia. I just think that if there was going to be special consideration taken by P&Z to allow more than one per 300 feet, this might set the precedent that neighbors can get along, people can run successful businesses, and not negatively impact other residents and, you know, working streets of Columbia. As stated too, there's several rental complexes adjacent to our street, and I think every neighbor except for Owen and Susan on all sides of my property are all rentals, long-term rentals, even the ones south of us, which I guess we're not seeking the maximum amount of occupancy because I don't want to negatively impact that neighborhood because I love it and I love our neighbors. So I think if there was sort of special consideration given to our residences, I would say it'd be great for all of us because I don't plan to keep it as an STR forever. I mean, I plan to move back into the neighborhood someday and, or have my sons move back there. But yeah, I love the neighborhood and I want to still make it beautiful and operate it, you know, a successful business at the minimum so as not to cause consternation between neighbors. And, you know, I heard the case before both of ours and there's a lot of people opposed to this. And there are a lot of people opposed to it on like the West Ash Neighborhood Association Facebook page because the limited amount of affordable housing. And I get that. I was a struggling person trying to afford a house in that neighborhood when it came up and I was grateful for it. But I want to keep it as an, you know, an owner-occupied dwelling at some point. And this is just a means to an end for me, so.
Any questions for the speaker? Mr. Williams?
Feel obligated to ask, yeah, as we typically do, when there's been a violation, if you can tell us.
For the weeds?
Yeah, tell us just what happened there. And,
That was last summer. The one notice I received was when I have someone mow it, our company, he ended up quitting. And I think there was like a week and a half, maybe two between mows when I had to find a different mower to come and they took care of it almost immediately. But that's the only known violation I've ever had. I've never had any known noise. I have very strict instructions on my Airbnb page, too, about the city's noise ordinance times. I also have a very strict check-in and vetting process because I want to keep it nice. I love that house. You know, that's the whole idea is I want to have the bare minimum so there's less wear and tear on the house so it stays beautiful. I've also had it updated with new HVAC, new plumbing, electrical, and it's going to be getting a new roof, hopefully, in the next few weeks. So,
questions for the speaker?
Thank you. That was actually going to be one of my questions, why you were limiting it to the 120 nights, because the application identifies that you're not using it yourself. So it's strictly wear and tear on the house.
Ultimately, we're trying to just minimize the use on the house, but still, you know, pay the note. And
so you're renting it just enough to get the funds to cover the costs.
Yeah, cover the costs, keep it in our family.
Okay, my other question, unlike the case just before you, you're zoned R1. Mm-hmm. And in this neighborhood, that typically takes an action by the owner to downzone it. Did you do that, or was it that when you...
When I purchased it, I want to say it was R2. But I think someone else had it had several other properties rezoned, because you could have, like, there were people in our neighborhood who were upset that people were turning their detached garages into, you know, dwellings and renting those out. So it was not me, but.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
No, it's spot zoning now, sort of, in that neighborhood. So it's interesting. And I was just wondering if that influenced your thinking about the house and how you wanted to use it.
Well, I lived in it prior to and wanted to hold on to it because both of my sons would be very upset if I sold it and got rid of it, because they want to live in it one day. So,
thank you.
Yeah. Any other questions for the speaker?
Nope.
Sorry.
Thank you, ma'am. Any discussion with the commission?
Oh, wait, we have another.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, we're still in public hearing.
Right. Yeah, I'd like to speak.
Hi, I'm Dr. Les Gray. I live at 14 McBain. I'm one of the people that cannot afford to buy a home. And I also live on the side of the street where people park. So if there are concerns about density, I am deeply nosy and curious, and I would articulate those now. I received 2 postcards for this case and the previous one. I know my neighbors, they help me whenever I need to shovel snow. They tell me whenever my trash can is overflowing. I am not concerned about either of these rentals. And if I were, I knew how to file a complaint. I am so deeply appreciative of your thoughtfulness and your concern and what the work that you have done and continue to do. And I hope that you get more cases with delightful people that appreciate the work that you're doing.
Thank you.
Any questions for the speaker? Don't leave now.
I can't believe how chipper you are at this time of the night. Thank you. Thank you for coming forward. That's really useful information.
Questions for the speaker? Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Susan Seven McBain. Talking about the other side. I would have prepared some remarks had I known, but I guess my general remarks are, with us knowing Tia for so long, and I can recommend that she takes care of things. We didn't know about the weeds. I don't know what that was about, but she takes care of the property. She cares about the property. The bottom line is, having an Airbnb on either side doesn't concern us. I think mostly because number 9 is going to be a busier Airbnb, and we've seen Francie run that way. Number 5 that we're talking about now, it seems like a lot of Tia's guests are coming along the times of some of the big Columbia events, like True False, and some of the... it's not necessarily football games, but kind of more family events. And so we have seen that run really well. I didn't realize that it was even the amount of nights that it said on the screen. I thought it was less nights than that. So obviously she's vetting her her tenants well, because sometimes we didn't even realize they were there. And I would just like to give an even testimony for both sides of my neighbors.
Questions for the speaker?
Thank you. Ma'am. Thank you for sticking around.
Yeah, the speakers. State your name, address.
Francie Gordon, 1119 Lakeshore Drive. So you guys would think that I would be in opposition of this, and she's my competition, but I am not. I went to high school with her. And anyway, I am in support of both of us being able to operate our short-term rentals there. next to each other. Well, almost next to each other. So, any questions?
Any questions for the speaker? Thank you, ma'am.
Okay, thanks.
Kevin Murphy, 1119 Lakeshore Drive. I would also like to express my support for Tia's request. And just one quickly, one other thing. So both of these requests went out, the very dense neighborhood, went out to 60 plus postcards, went to the West Ash Neighborhood Association, a very active neighborhood association. And I just want you guys to be cognizant of, you know, like the crowds that may have not shown up tonight with all that publicity and advertisement. So, thank you.
Question for the speaker? None? Anybody else wish to speak? Going once, going twice, going three times. Close public hearing. Any discussion with commissioners?
I have a comment.
Walters?
We could only dream that all future SDRs would have participants who are as attentive and conscientious and cooperative as those we have just witnessed tonight, in the last two occasions tonight.
I thought I was delirious or might have been dreaming, but I agree. This is like, I'm trying to make sure I was awake, but yeah, I agree.
I'd like to make a motion.
Yeah. Well, I just want to, in the spirit of council's advice, I just want to reiterate that I do view the 300-foot as a consideration but not a mandate, and that given the comments that we've heard on this case and the support from the neighbors, I think that, and the fact that these licenses, these STRs are specific to the individual owners of the property, that I don't have a concern with the proximity issue here. And otherwise, seems like a test case for really what we should be hoping for, and that neighbors can come together, and without trying to sound like I'm being too cute, I feel like I'm at a block party for at City Hall.
Slow.
And for this case record, I would like to reiterate that the fact that the second one is coming in with a crafted, it feels like, application for the number of nights and for the number of guests. They're not just maxing out the quantity. Tells me that this is a sensitive request, and it does address some of the concern that we had with the distancing, which was just the impact on the neighbors and the neighborhood overall. So we've gotten the neighbors' comments, or lack of them, that this arrangement is working, and I appreciate the crafted request. Thank you.
I'd like to make a motion.
It is ripe for a motion.
In the case, in the matter of case number 136-2025, an SDR conditional use permit for 5 McBain Avenue, I move that we approve the requested SDR CUP subject to the following: condition that maximum usage shall not exceed 120 nights annually, and that the maximum of 6 transient guests, regardless of allowance permitted by IPMC.
Second.
Moved and properly seconded. Any discussion on this motion? Once, going twice. Are you good? Okay. Let's get on the books, Ms. Secretary. We are ready when you are.
Commissioner Ortiz.
Yes.
Commissioner Placer.
Yes.
Commissioner Stanton.
Yes.
Commissioner Galway Jones, absent. Commissioner Williams, yes. Commissioner Lowe.
Yes.
Commissioner Wilson.
Yes.
Commissioner Walters.
Yes.
Commissioner Brodsky is absent. That is 7 yeses, 0 noes. The motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. That recommendation will be forwarded to City Council. Any comments from staff? From the public?
Yeah, let's go on consent agenda.
this, if Mr. Zinner back me up here, this will likely go to consent agenda.
That is correct. They're consent agenda items. They will be considered that the final action will be considered at the second meeting of council in May.
Is there any more comments from the public? Please step up to the podium and make your comments. Name, address, all that good stuff.
Steve Arrows. I belong to her. Tia Brown, 4707 McMichael. I appreciate the open-mindedness of the panel and looking out for the neighborhood and both the ladies that were trying to set something aside for their families. A lot of hard work went into one, and a lot of love in the other one. So thank you very much for what you did tonight. Appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Sir. Any other public comments? Comments from staff? Ms. Jenner?
So after almost 5 hours, I'm going to try to make this short. Next meeting's on the 24th of April. It will be a much shorter meeting, hopefully. We have a PD plan, so it may not be. Okay. We actually have two. So our next meeting will be on the 24th. We have our regular work session. We will have several topics on that work session. As we discussed this evening, the discussion of our potential revisions to the definition of family and the occupancy standards associated with that will not be coming back at the April 24th meeting. Those will come back at your first meeting in May. Based upon the conversation that Ms. Ortiz brought up this evening as it related to the topic on Monday night's City Council meeting, staff prepared a report at the request of council after the short-term regulations were adopted in February of last year. Contained within that report were observations from the Peanut Gallery staff with progress made in the way of compliance. As many of you are aware, I think I have mentioned this previously, the last update we had from one of our vendors that we have been discussing potential services with ran an update of the number of short-term rentals within the city. Approximately 475 were active as of the end of March. Of that, as I indicated earlier this evening, we have received a total of 42 applications. We've got a lot of work in front of us. As Ms. Ortiz is probably well aware, and some of you may have read the correspondence that was presented to council under the report section, the average time that it takes to process a short-term rental application is approximately 12 hours. Of the 42 applications we have received, 9 have been for administrative approvals by choice of the applicant for 120 days, and they were their principal residence. The remaining applications we have received have only seen one denial, one withdrawal, and the rest have all been approved. That is not without significant consideration by this body. One of the recommended actions for the City Council that they have redirected for us to come back to you with an actual text change to the existing regulations is designed to enhance the overall efficiency of administration and the ability then to free up our staff time, this body's time, and City Council's time to deal with issues that are of greater potential pressing need, i.e. our small lots, text amendments that we have deferred as a result of having to spend significant resources and time discussing this topic. So we have recommended to City Council, and they have asked us to come back to the Planning Commission with several amendments. One of those amendments is designed to eliminate with the exception of three situations, all conditional use permit applications to the Planning and Zoning Commission. Those three conditions are you are within 300 feet of another licensed short-term rental, you are within 1,000 feet of a school, or you are with you have open code violations associated with the dwelling being sought to be licensed. That does not address the issues that were discussed this evening with our High Ridge site, where you have neighbors that have complaints. They potentially have been negatively impacted. However, I think the discussion this evening as to how that gets resolved, it will self-resolve itself based on the way that the regulations are structured. On the public understanding that there is an opportunity for them to report, regardless if they want to or not, we have afforded residents that have not had the opportunity. We are looking at, with a vendor, the easiest method of a 24/7 call center. It is not coming through the City of Columbia. It is basically the vendor's call center manned in the United States to reach out directly to the registered contact. There is and will be a discussion with that vendor, the vendor we choose, what the parameters are for how long that designated agent has to resolve that issue. And it is our understanding through the vendor interviews that we have done, they will follow up with the vendor within that specified and established time by the City of Columbia to determine if it has been. If it has not been, as we pointed out this evening, the current rental compliance regulations say two verified complaints in a given 12-month period of time constitutes the right for the director of the Housing and Neighborhood Services Division to revoke the short-term rental license. So for those that may be watching or those that may come forward to us, try us. You may or you may not get away. But the City of Columbia and this process has been designed such that we can actively provide protection to our residents and go through a process by which we're inspecting properties for life safety and we're addressing other related issues. That is not to say that the proposed revisions that we will come forward with may be agreed upon by this body, and that is part of what the discussion is going to be about. How do we structure how we may make revisions? We are also recommending that the elimination of Tier 1 come out of the entire ordinance for simplification purposes. Tier 1 is the 30 night or less. It has not been applied for since the ordinance was adopted. And if somebody chooses to either seek a greater number of rental nights, but then self-chooses to only use for 30 nights a year, that is their choice. And so there is no real value in the complicated nature of having multiple tiers when a tier is not being used. The second suggestion as it relates to simplification, which will be as challenging maybe as it relates to the elimination of a conditional use permit coming before this body, except for the three exceptions, will be to potentially eliminate the 120-night category. As you know, we have had almost every single short-term rental application that has come through, and there have been very few that have been by owner occupants, but every short-term rental application that has come through has been for 210 nights. Again, there is a necessity in our mind from an administrative perspective that the ordinance be simplified to encourage people to apply. Now, what you have not heard me say, which you have in prior settings, there is no change to the maximum number of licenses. We are not proposing, and we will not propose any change beyond the current one license per entity. Now, all of us have had the discussion previously that a husband and a wife, and we had this at our last meeting, could establish two LLCs. They are two individuals, and they have a right to own property separately. And that is still going to be the potential workaround for a couple to have two. But we are not proposing any increase in the total number at this point. So we are still also open and willing to do conditional use approvals under certain conditions. But given the time that I spend between an application being submitted to being assigned, I am probably in the range of about 4 hours. And it is an absurd amount of time for us to be spending to get the results that we have had presented to us. So the changes that we are offering aren't to undermine the intent of the regulation. They are to assist in being able to augment its efficiency. We are not at a point, after talking with our business licensing office manager today, we are not at a point that of the great majority of our licenses that are short-term rental certificates or CUPs that have gone through, we do not have more than 50% of those licensed at this point, fully licensed through the process, meaning they have not yet obtained their business license. That is something that I will have better numbers on when we come back to you all, so we have an understanding of where that is. That's not necessarily relevant at this level for you. It is more relevant for us from an administrative perspective, but it is also making very big in the rearview mirror for me a concern as it relates to actual enforcement after June 1st. And so what we need to be able to do is we need to be able to create processes that are going to be able to be more effectively and efficiently administered on the back end of this. I know you all love spending 4 hours talking about short-term rentals. However, we believe that this change, if agreed to, will definitely enhance our effectiveness. It does not undermine what the ordinance had within it. We will not be able to make everyone happy, and I think that's to Mr. Williams' point. When a neighbor is notified, they either are upset because they're now made aware of something that they were never aware of. So the flip side to this is if they're not going to be informed of a conditional use needing to be sought, but an individual operating a short-term rental fulfills the obligations of the short-term rental process, from a zoning perspective, they meet all of what we need, and then they comply with all of the regulatory steps, they still may not be informed. And I think that is another thing that we will have to discuss. How do we do information upon licensure or upon application? But I think what we have seen here over the course of the last almost 10 months is really a process that we may be needed to go through that has not necessarily yielded, I think, some of the thoughts that we originally conceived would evolve. We don't get much in the way of opposition. And that we do often, while it is very thoughtfully considered by this body, normally doesn't affect the outcome. And that that's just an observation, and I don't mean that in any negative fashion. We will bring to you, if I can get to that, and I'm getting to a point where hopefully I only have 6 items I need to review for the agenda for the next meeting, I will hopefully be able to get you some proposed text to review at our April 24th meeting. I will also endeavor to get text as it relates to our more pressing issue, and that is the small lot integration, so we can start working through Article 5 and Appendix A and continue to move that project on concurrently. Council has directed the commission to consider the amendments, and based upon that direction, it would come to once we are hopefully in agreement, or we have presented what we believe from a staff perspective to be appropriate, we will schedule a public hearing accordingly. As I have previously indicated, staff is going to present proposed changes that effectively address, from an administrative perspective, what we believe to be appropriate. We respect the commission's input to the process, but the text amendments that are going to be presented are staff's. We are not going to sit and endlessly debate and discuss proposed revisions. We cannot afford to do that. I will ask the commission to respectfully, if you disagree, when we get to a public hearing, vote as you feel appropriate. But we need to move these items forward. And so that is my request. We will spend 2 work sessions discussing these text changes for short-term rental. That is what was asked of me. How long would it take? I've estimated it would take probably 2 meetings. and that may be two full meetings. So depending on what topics we want to try to sandwich in, it may take more than two work sessions, but I'm going to give us probably about 3 hours, hopefully. These changes aren't that cataclysmic, but we need to have an opportunity to be able to present to you all what we believe from a staff perspective is appropriate. You as a commission have the right to vote up or down for those, and then council ultimately makes that decision of their own. I just want to give you fair warning that that is the approach that I'm going to take here. It is not to be mean or trying to upstage you all. It's a matter of efficiency in the way that we should be developing ordinances. So, with that being said, as a recap to what was discussed on Monday night and what is forthcoming on your work session agendas, these are the following seven items that will show up on your agenda for April 24th. As I often refer to, the first two are a twofer. It is a rezoning of property that is off of Clark Lane, immediately west of the Schnucks Shopping Center site, that is on the corner of Clark and St. Charles. This would be the piece that is all the way on the western side of the Schnucks building and adjoins the Lynx residential multifamily development. They are seeking MN, going from MN to MC to allow for the development of a hotel as well as other more auto-oriented uses along that property. The hotel would be the anchor piece to a future development. The preliminary plat shows the lot layout of that future development. We have two general public hearings then, and these of course are in our favorite place, down in Discovery. So Mr. Stanton, I would imagine you may need to be recusing yourself from these based on your work down there. What I will tell you is 9225, as you remember, was tabled. There were a number of technical issues associated with that. Those technical issues are very technical. And they have everything to do with the limitations associated with the Discovery Park development. I will ask that the commission at this point please maintain an open mind as we discuss the proposed development plan for Discovery Park Apartments. It is going to take a little bit of stretch maybe for you all to get to the point that staff, based on the information we've had provided to us and what I believe the applicant will present to you as a part of their presentation, that certain issues within this project, unfortunately, because it's evolved over 20 years, got out of control. We have now been able to get the data we need in order to make a salient recommendation and establish a path forward. The applicant has discussed with us that path forward, but they are also in a need to receive the approval that they are seeking at this point. What I can tell you is 16 years ago when I joined this staff, Discovery Park was one of my first projects. It was the one I managed. And so I am a little bit shocked at what I saw when we had this project originally come in and the data that I asked for, and then got the data that I needed in order to help Ross do the evaluation. Very, very concerning to me. But we have an opportunity here, and we have to look at what 20 years of development has produced. The second project that is down in Discovery is an existing building that is part of a project that we have revised previously. So this will fall right into Ms. Gowie-Jones's wheelhouse of not being very happy that we have planned development. But it is an existing single-story building that has the ability to have a second story added to it. That second story is proposed to be improved with more residential, second story residential units, but it needs a plan revision in order to do that. It is part of a three lot PD plan, and therefore the way that this overall project is functioning, PD zoning on it is probably the more appropriate route. We can't just up and rezone this one lot, and therefore that's why that PD revision is still believed appropriate by staff. We fully support the commission's position, however, on not trying to approve plan development moving forward. And the last three cases are our short-term rental CUPs that are on the agenda. And one off of 115 Clinton, 1010 West Broadway. This is basically catty corner from D&H Drug. And then one on Brenda, Lane, which is off of West Walnut and backs up to the Columbia Country Club. So just to be able to familiarize yourself, and I need to look at why the mapping is different between 154 and 155. I believe it should be the same parcel, though we will confirm that before we come before this body on the 24th. The far right-hand slide is our Discovery Apartments. This is the one that we will have two parcels out of the five shown with development, and the remaining three are lots for future development, but those lots for future development will make much more sense to you once you have all of the details unpacked. And it is very possible I may be giving that report for you just because of the complexity associated with the overall project. We have our other PD revision down at Discovery. That is the existing building that is constructed on Armitage that would have a second story added to it and 10 one-bedroom units placed on that second story. Clinton is there on your right-hand side, just south of Ash Street, so probably another West Ash neighborhood request. And then the last two is 1010 Broadway and 221 Brenda Lane. Those are the cases. Those are the issues that we have coming before us. I would like to extend my appreciation for the amount of time that you all spent tonight, the deliberation on the cases. And I would also like to extend my apologies for some of the obvious errors that were made in several of our cases this evening. We will improve our attention to detail. We have got a lot of things that we have been dealing with here, and my staff, as you obviously can probably tell, has been slightly overwhelmed by the volume. And when you become overwhelmed, as you all probably well know, the propensity to make mistakes rises. I can't crack the whip all the time, but I will crack it after tomorrow. Because I got to be careful about it being cracked on me. Ultimately, that is all we have tonight. 5 hours in, the computer crashed for me, so hopefully the video is able to be produced. Thank you all.
I do have a question. I know Commissioner comments. I got to get this off my chest. What is the status of someone running an STR at this time? Because I think a lot of the issue about people coming forward, they're not scared. They're not nervous. Like, they feel like, so what? And I feel like that's why I say this stuff I do. And when we went through this process, my understanding was, if you do not have a defined use of that land, I'm an R1 and I have a list of things I can do in R1. If it is not in that list of things I can do in R1 and I do that, that's an illegal use of that land. I can't have a concrete plant in the back of my yard because it is not a permitted use in R1. And if I do have a concrete plant in my backyard, that is illegal. I'm a criminal because I'm illegally using that land. So the point I'm trying to get to is because now I feel like you're softening what I'm saying, and I fight it all the time. People feel, well, oh, it's not criminal. It's like a little white crime.
That's not the
point.
The
point
is that the law begins on
June 1st. Right.
And I think what Mr. Stan, you need to understand is in February of 2024, the permitted use table in the UDC was amended to add short-term rental tiers, tier one, tier two, and tier three. Okay. And at the same time that ordinance was adopted, the effective date was delayed until June 1st of 2024 to start receiving applications, and then full effectiveness of the ordinance and its provisions was in the ordinance as it was adopted, was given one full year. So from June 1st, 2024, to June 1st of 2025, if you're operating a short-term rental in any of the zoning districts where it is identified in the permitted use table, it is a allowed use. You are not obligated until June 1st to have a CUP, a short-term rental certificate, and a business license. That is what the ordinance says. So they are operating out of compliance. They are not operating illegally because we have adopted in the UDC and acknowledged a short-term rental can function in about five different zoning districts subject to fulfilling and meeting all of the regulatory requirements, which were delayed. Full compliance was delayed until June 1st of 2025. And so I understand, and I trust me, I see applications come in every day, and these people don't seem very concerned that when I send comments out, I need to get them back immediately. It's, you know, and when I ask for certain things that are regulatorily required, it's like, oh, well, you know, I'll give him what he wants and make him search. And quite honestly, a lot of folks have told me, well, you don't need to be so accommodating and you don't need to be so helpful. Well, part of what I end up doing in my job is you try to bring people into compliance, not by vinegar, but you have to be polite. You have to continue to work with them. And that is what I have defined my career as a public servant. I go beyond what any public servant generally would in order to ensure we get to the end objective. Maybe that's taking, I'm letting people take advantage of me, but they are not. And I think your observation is very correct. They are not concerned that, oh, well, you know, whatever, if I don't get listed by June 1st, it's not that big a deal. Try us. That's all I have to say is, try the city.
What's the difference in language between being non-compliant and illegal?
You're making an assertion by telling them that they are illegal because they are not identified or acknowledged as a permissible use in the code. I think that's the difference. They're acknowledged as a use in the code. They were not previously acknowledged until February of 2024. And because they were never previously acknowledged in the code, the use theoretically shouldn't have even been occurring within the city of Columbia, but there were no regulations by which to define what they were. And so now that we have defined what they are, we have defined where they are allowed and by what means, you're operating out of compliance. If you ran a concrete batch plant in your backyard, but you had it before we adopted zoning regulations, you are a legal non-conforming concrete batch plant. And you could continue to exist until you decided to discontinue the use of that concrete batch plant in your backyard. However, if you established it after we said that you couldn't, you would be illegal.
But they're not in compliance because we've said you don't need to be in compliance until June 1st.
But to the point that Mr. Stanton is trying to convince these people, you are not, you need to become compliant if you want to continue to operate.
Correct.
You're not operating legally.
But that's why,
nobody is under the, nobody, and I think part of why we have such a lack of applications is because everybody's waiting. Everybody's waiting, and this is human nature, and I think, you know, we evaluated this as a part of the regulatory adoption process. Originally, we said 6 months before you had to be fully licensed, and I think I probably maybe had a vein pop out of my neck because I knew what that was going to create. We also acknowledged that in order for people to make a transition, because we decided to reduce the number of licenses so significantly, it was concluded that we needed to give them at least a year to make a decision on what to do with their property. So what I would tell you is you have people, by human nature, that are going to wait till the very last moment. Well, I'm sorry. March 3rd was the last application deadline that one could make to ensure that you at least got through the conditional use process of the Planning Commission and City Council to ensure that you were already in queue to be able to have a legally compliant short-term rental. Right now, everybody's on borrowed time. And so you're not going to be approved by June 1st through the CUP process if you require it. So mind you, what I just discussed about a revision to the code, if we take out the conditional use process, You also have some imbalance that potentially gets created about when the effective date of the ordinance is, or the requirement that you be compliant. Maybe not, because we're going to basically say it probably becomes effective then immediately, is what I would say, because we have simplified the process. So there's no reason at that point, once you are identified as not having a license, that we're going to probably take, we're probably going to just slap your hand. We're probably going to take a more, possibly a more aggressive action to get them compliant.
And I got to hold my statement until after June 1st. Then I can say what I'm saying?
Yeah. Okay. If we still require, at the rate we're requiring folks to come in for conditional uses. And I think what's going to start happening, and I think we all see the handwriting on the wall, as more people become comfortable in registering, and we have more short-term rentals coming out of the woodwork, you're going to trip, without doubt, you are going to trip the 300-foot criterion, and if we add in the 1,000 feet from a school, you are going to have several that will trip that. And so I think the trifecta of possible action in the future, open violations, school, and being within 300 feet. That is going to be what we will probably have to then start to wrestle with. And I think part of what this whole discussion needs to be as we move forward with the process is we're going to figure out how do we want to try to address what may be coming. And I, you know, again, it's an evolving issue as it relates regulatorily, and you know we're all hopping on the train and trying to figure out where we're heading. And I, at this point, tell you is there's 425 more short-term rentals potentially that need to be licensed. Lee Kotwitz, our manager for our Office of Neighborhood Services, her contacts with a number of people that she does know that are running short-term rentals have basically said after June 1st, I'm no longer going to run it.
Oh,
and so there are a number of people, and I think what the vendor services will provide us as we require them to sweep sites is we will find if that actual conveyance to Ms. Kotwitz has been correct and the total number is being reduced. But we will also have more information as to about where we do need to focus our attention on enforcement and compliance. And so we need to get the regulatory house in order first to create efficiency. We also need to concurrently be getting our vendor secured in order to be able to assist us in compliance moving forward. And we are desperately trying to get there from a staff perspective. We do hope to present to council at its April 21st meeting a report that requests authorization to do contract negotiation for a vendor, so which will hopefully then result in having that vendor on call or under contract by June 1.
I make a motion to adjourn.
I move. Yeah, I second that.
I second.
Meeting's adjourned.